Sometimes the sequels are better than the originals. Outfield Preview Part 2 figures to be one of those sequels. Like Terminator 2.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I know I'm missing a
big one. The sequel to Alien.
You love Aliens. Ghostbusters, right?
Oh, and I mean, Ghostbusters 1 is better than Ghostbusters 2. I've always said this. I prefer Ghostbusters 2. Like, if they were both on, I would watch Ghostbusters 2. But Ghostbusters 1 is a better movie.
I would say the Toy Stories got progressively better.
Really?
Yeah.
I've only seen the first one.
Same here.
They all have happy endings, I assume?
Well,
spoiler alert.
Depends how you define happy.
I also like Rocky 2 better than Rocky 1. But Rocky 1 was the best picture, so might be kind of like my Ghostbusters argument.
Yeah, I've never seen anything but Rocky 1, so I can't.
What?
Me too.
Me too.
Oh my gosh. They're always on. I was watching Rocky 4 2 days ago.
Well, unlike you, Adam, I don't just have gobs of time to spend watching television.
As we were just discussing, actually.
Yeah.
Well, okay, let's get into the Outfield Preview Part 2. On Thursday, February 27th, and a programming update for you. We're going 5 days a week starting next week. What we're going to do is, since I don't think I'm going to be in on Monday, I think we're going to do a long mailbag show tomorrow on Friday. So email us at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. I'm going to split it up into two parts.
Oh, come on. Close the curtain. Don't show everybody.
No, people need to know that, because if there's a lot of news on over the weekend and we do a Monday podcast and don't allude to it.
They're just not going to listen to that second one now.
No, of course they are. Their questions.
This is stale. Do you eat stale popcorn, Adam?
I don't.
Neither do I.
But their questions will be answered.
I don't like fresh popcorn that much.
I don't either, Al. It's a good call. All right. Coming up on today's podcast, we're going to look at rounds 8. And later in our roto draft, talk about some of the outfielders going there. We'll just take a deeper look at the position, basically. Some position battles, guys who could return to form. We'll talk about players like Yosmani Tomas and Jock Peterson, late round value. Make sure you go to the website to look at the videos that we have, fantasynews.cbsports.com. And I want to start by revising my thoughts on Billy Hamilton.
Uh-oh.
And it's not my thoughts on Billy Hamilton. It's my thoughts on drafting Billy Hamilton. I still think he's going to have a good year. But while we were arguing about it yesterday, or Tuesday, whenever that was, Scott, you made very good points about how high you have to take him in roto for a category specialist. And I don't think I'm going to do it. I think I'm going to let him go in roto unless I can get him for a good value, like the seventh round. And I think I'm more likely to take Billy Hamilton actually in a points league where I feel like he might be undervalued this year. But I've never really gone for category specialists in roto leagues, and it's worked out for me. Mm-hmm. So why would I change this year when he's going to – I think basically for him to produce like fifth-round value, he's going to have a really – like a 280 batting average or better and score a lot of runs, and I don't want to count on that. So
yeah,
I'm going to revise my strategy. Not my thoughts on Billy Hamilton, but just my roto strategy.
And I mean, when you say to – be worth a fifth round pick, I mean, he comes out, he doesn't need to project for that much for the rating system to say he's a fifth round pick. But my issue with that is the rating system tries to combine five categories into one sum value, like it's a head to head league, when really a roto league is five separate competitions going on at once. So if you're sacrificing four for the sake of one, even if it's really good in that one, just what kind of impact is that going to have on your team? It makes it so you have to be very careful what you do with the rest of your picks.
Yeah,
I think it was on a podcast and not offline. First of all, what you said about it being five separate competitions, I think is really, you know, that's a great way to look at it. I think you overstate how careful you've got to be with the other categories as compared to, say, Ben Revere. And I could probably think of some others. I don't think Hamilton is as one-dimensional as – I mean, look, he's certainly
– Hey, Ben Revere hits 300 every year, basically.
Yeah. No, that's true. But, you know, Hamilton has a little bit more power. He's going to score some runs. And he's not going to kill you in batting average. You don't need him to hit 280. If he hits 260, he's gonna return that draft pick value.
Okay. So here's the thing. So I took Billy Hamilton, and then I'm starting to say I really got to get some power in my outfield spots. And I just don't know how many guys there are that are going to give me a lot of power later in the draft that don't really sink my batting average.
Which he's already doing himself.
Possibly.
Theoretically, yeah.
And those guys are not going to give me any steals, which isn't really a huge deal because I have Hamilton. But that's the thing. Like, if he doesn't have a good batting average year, then I'm in a lot of trouble in that category, I think, for a guy that I invested a fifth-round pick in.
Yeah, I don't think you're in a lot of trouble. I really don't. But I mean, I also feel like I'm nitpicking a bit because the general point is right. You do have to pay some attention, more attention than what's going on in your categories than if you took somebody who is more well-balanced. And yeah, and I'm not really going to argue hard against you on it because I myself am going to be very hesitant to use a fifth-round pick on Hamilton for the reasons that both of you have laid out.
Okay.
I actually did a roto draft last night with some people across the industry, so slightly different perspectives all around.
12 teams?
12 teams, so the same roto format we would be drafting in. Billy Hamilton went in round 5, not to me, obviously. Yeah. And then Ben Revere went in round 8. Now, I do prefer Hamilton in round 5 to Revere in round 8, but I would say that's bad value for both. You know, hopefully, if you need a steal specialist later, Revere's available in a later round, or you just turn to somebody else, like AJ Pollock went in round 16. How many steals do you project AJ Pollock for, Al? Is it more than 20? Right?
Yes, more than 20. Yeah, I want to say 25, 26, something like that.
Yeah. So you know, maybe 10 fewer steals than somebody like Revere would give you. Same good batting average, definitely more power, probably double-digit home runs. And I would say a lot more runs scored, too, because he gets on base, unlike somebody like Revere, who's basically just all batting average.
And also a leadoff guy, too.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and Revere went around 17 in this roto mock draft we did. So,
which seems more appropriate to me.
Yeah, now, of course, Hamilton might steal 40 more bases than those guys, but, you know, just something to keep in mind. We got some news on Michael Saunders that's just breaking now. Of course, the Josh Hamilton news, as John Heyman reported last night, that he had a relapse and used cocaine. So we'll talk about that unfortunate situation. Let's go to draft picks you liked and draft picks you didn't like, round 8 or later. Tell me some you like, guys.
Just before we started taping here, I was kind of scrambling because in the drafts I was looking at, I had a hard time finding ones that really stood out. And the couple that I did focus on were later rounds. So one is the aforementioned AJ Pollock in round 15. I think he's one of the few sleepers that I'm finding in our drafts and auctions is sleeping a bit, or people are sleeping on him. And I think that's good value for him for all the things that Scott just mentioned with the batting average, the steals, the runs, a little bit of power. And another player that I've been sleeping on for years who doesn't seem to be getting any worse is Torrey Hunter. And I think in round 20 of a roto draft, which is where he went, that's good value.
I think this is the year Hunter finally busts. And I wrote about it in the bust column, so I won't go into great detail, but last 3 years, he's survived a drop in power by being in some of the deepest line, not only being in some of the deepest lineups in baseball, but hitting in the most favorable lineup spot, primarily second. The first year with the Angels, it was between Mike Trout and Albert Pujols. And then the last 2 years with the Texas, with the Tigers, it was ahead of Cabrera and Fielder, and then ahead of Cabrera and Victor Martinez. So that helped him become a 300 hitter, which he wasn't previously in his career when he still had power. You know, he saw a lot more pitches to hit. You see it reflected in his walk rate. His walk rate was down all three of those years because he was having so many great pitches to hit. And now he's in Minnesota. There's not really any line of protection. He's probably going to be the protector himself.
Seventh highest scoring team in the majors last year.
That's true, but he's probably going to be the protector himself, and I just don't think he has the skills for that anymore.
Well, I'm glad you didn't go too in-depth on it.
Is that in-depth?
That's pretty in-depth. That was good stuff.
Yeah.
How about Torrey Hunter and Kevin Garnett going back to Minnesota?
Wow.
In the same season. I bet you didn't think
that is
crazy.
How about some draft picks you like then, Scott?
Well, actually, I was going to mention Pollock myself. That was a good pick,
love
end
AJ
of round
Pollock.
15.
Al.
Thank you, Scott.
Yeah.
Way to pick your own pick, Al.
I think particularly seeing some of the players go around him, Denard Span maybe isn't getting quite enough credit either because he's a 30-steal guy, seems to be now, finally got to that point last year, and batting average and runs scored, batting leadoff for the Nationals. He went in round 14 of our Roto draft.
Scott, you know, Denard Span 2 years in a row has been significantly better in points leagues than rotisserie leagues. Steals are underrated in points leagues. Also, I think, you know, a lot of doubles and triples. 39 yep. doubles, 8 triples last year. 2013, he had 28 doubles, 11 triples. Yep. Those are really valuable. So this is a guy who's been number 14 in points leagues, number 21 in Roto last season. And in 2013, Span was number 33 in points, number 48 in Roto. I'm not sure if he played fewer games.
Well, he used to, last year was the first time he got up to 30 steals. And, yeah, he has had some injury issues over the years. But he has always been a good plate discipline guy. He was kind of like Michael Brantley in that he was a, because of his peripherals, he was a fringy guy in head-to-head leagues, not really worth your time in Roto. But last year, he kind of broke out, kind of like Brantley, not to the same extent, obviously. So now he's just good. So I like him. You know, if I can refer to that draft we did that you guys weren't a part of
last night.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I think this whole Mookie Betts business, well, not really Mookie Betts business, the Shane Victorino Betts, Victorino business is getting too much emphasis because Betts fell to round 12 in this league. And that's another guy who I anticipate 30 steals from, double-digit home runs, and probably a high batting average.
But you just think Victorino's going to get hurt?
Yeah, I do think he's going to get hurt. Or he's not going to be very good. Or Betts won't be the odd man out. Maybe Rusne Castillo would, because we're kind of just piecing together all the different things John Farrell has said this offseason. But he at one point basically declared Betts the team's leadoff hitter. So what happened to that? I mean, Betts can play center field. I just think somehow, some way, this is going to work out. And that's not to say I'm really worried about Castillo either. It's just I think if it really comes to it, the general manager will make a way for it not to be an issue.
Or Betts will be playing right field for the Philadelphia Phillies.
I guess that's possible.
Some draft picks I like. Tell me what you guys think. Jason Worth at the end of round 11. I thought that was a good time to take the risk on him.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, again, didn't stand out as great value because I'm kind of bearish on him, but not bad.
Shin-Soo Chu in round 13.
Yeah, I agree. Tremendous upside there.
Yeah, I mean, how could he last to the 13th round in a 5 outfielder league?
Because I'm among the owners who passed on him in all his previous rounds. I mean, I am worried he's not going to bounce back very far.
But even if he does, I mean, you're talking about bouncing back from 2 years ago when he was a top 10 outfielder. I think he was number 4 in points and top 10 in Roto, or top 12. And Shin-Soo Chu was hurt last year for most of it. So I don't know. Even if he bounces back slightly, I still feel like he'll be better than a 13th round value. But I let him go for a while, too. I didn't draft
him. Probably, but I'm not sure. Like, I'm not sure. I think I do have Chu ranked ahead of Pollock, but to me, they're very similar at this point, and I think Pollock's a little safer.
Pollock's done it for half a season.
Yeah, but he's a lot younger, and
really, Chu's not old. Chu's like 32.
But old
33 in July.
Which obviously is an ancient, but it's old enough that I have concerns much more than I would have, say, you know, 2-3 years ago about him being resilient enough to get all the way back to his best.
And two years ago was kind of an exception for the last 4 years or so, but a big thing was he walked 30 times more than he ever has in his career. Not that he's ever been a low walk guy, but 30 walks probably contributed to 15 more runs scored or so. You know, obviously he stayed healthy, which is something he hasn't always done, and he was still stealing bases, which he didn't really do at all last year. So it's just hard to say where he's going to go from here.
I also like Jock Peterson in round 15. I don't know that we've spoken too much about him, so
he's going to have a shot to play every day, right?
I think you pretty much have to assume that he's going to play every day.
And this is a guy that was awful last year. I mean, he 28 at-bats in the big leagues and batted 143 and didn't have a home run. But you can't argue with his minor league numbers. He was incredible with Jock Peterson.
Yeah, no, you can't. And, you know, if he had had the opportunity that, say, George Springer had to get beyond that early slump, I'm sure we would have seen much, much better results from Peterson. And, I think that is good value.
All right, picks you didn't like?
Straight off of my bust list, I got Yoenis Cespedes in the eighth round. I completely understand why he's going there. I understand the logic behind it that, you know, there's been fairly consistent production from Cespedes and that level of production you should buy in the eighth round. I just think that there were signs last year that the power wasn't as great as what it appeared to be, and that I just don't think he's going to be close to 100 RBI guy, even in the Tigers lineup.
Anything else? Or is it Scott's turn?
Let's see. Leonis Martin in round 13, another pretty one-dimensional guy. And that's too early of a pick, I think, to take on him. And Alex Rios in round 17, I mean, I know that's not much of an investment, but there were just others that went after him that felt a little safer to me.
So I see Pollock at the end of last pick of round 15, Brett Gardner round 16, Ben Revere round 17. You know, if you want to go with another position, you got Gene Segura in round 18. Do you think that steals are somewhat easy to get in the later rounds, and that's why taking Leonis Martin in the 13th round, was it?
Yes.
Is not a good pick. Like, that's not a late round. That's a mid round.
It's a mid round. And no, you put it exactly the way I would have liked to put it. That, Martin's going to give you those steals, but you can piece it together more cheaply.
Gotcha. Scott, picks you didn't like?
Well, the pick I liked the least was actually the one you marked here, and that's Avisaíl García in round 13.
Yeah, that was curious. Some other outfielders that went around that time. Leonis Martin went right after that. Shin-Soo Chu, Denard Span, Brandon Moss, Michael Kadire, Steve Pierce. So we're not talking about great players that he went ahead of.
Yeah, but then a couple rounds later, there's Pollock, there's Brett Gardner, there's...
García, so tell me about García and why he might have gone here and why you don't like it.
I do think he has some upside. We haven't really seen the upside, though, ever. He showed a little more power last year, but we're talking 172 at-bats, and he hit only 244.
Right.
So it's just all projection, basically. And I'm fine with that with a 22nd, 23rd round pick, but not a 13th round pick.
Anything else?
I mean, that was the biggest one for me. I do kind of want to counter what Al was saying about Cespedes, if I can.
Sure. Now's the time.
It's not just picking on Al either. I seem to be alone in the industry of not wanting to bury Cespedes. And, it seems to be a lot of, so much of his production is based on his RBI total, and that's true. But now he's going to Detroit, where he's going to be hitting behind Miguel Cabrera and Victor Martinez, two of the highest on-base guys in all the majors, well over 400 on-base percentages from each of them. Like, how does he not get 100 RBI by accident?
That's a good point, Al.
By not getting on base very often.
He hasn't gotten on base very often in the past, and he's been a consistent 100. Well, not a guess. But, I guess there's been injuries that kept him short of 100, but
right.
That kind of pace.
Yeah. Well, in two of those seasons, he had very high batting averages with runners in scoring position, and you could say, well, two out of three seasons, doesn't that mean? Because there are some players that are just consistently good at that. But then there's the third of the three seasons where, and I don't know what the number was, but it was much, much lower. And I wouldn't completely rule it out that he's going to be a good run producer this year, but it seems iffy for me when, let's see, go to the eighth round and see who else was available. It just seems like a weird word to use, but we use it speculative, because when you look at the base skill set, it just doesn't seem to match up Let's see, Melky Cabrera.
It's not so much about Cespedes' skill set, though, as the as Cabrera's skill set and Victor Martinez's skill set. He is in probably the best RBI spot of any hitter in the majors. I guess it's possible J.D. Martinez gets that spot instead of him, but I would assume just because of Cespedes' reputation, it would go to him. I think most of the projected batting orders have it that way. So, I mean, you know, you expect 25 home runs from him, or about that many. I think most people would say that. So with not just one guy, but two guys on base ahead of him 40% of the time, I don't know that he really needs to hit for a weirdly high batting average with runners in scoring position to get a ton of RBI.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. I think one thing I learned a lot last year was more about runs, but it's the same concept. It's like where you're hitting the order and who's hitting behind you can really make a difference, especially at a position like shortstop where the players aren't that good. But even like the late round outfielders like Anthony Gose, right? Mm. Same situation, could be batting second in that order, and maybe he'll be able to outperform his draft position or his draft value. He's not going to get drafted in mixed leagues because he'll score a lot of runs. And the same thing could be said for Cespedes. He'll drive in a lot of runs. He only hit 260 last year with 22 home runs, but he had 100 RBI. Cespedes, he finished as a top 15 outfielder in Roto, top 17 in points.
And just, you know, for full disclosure here, by the way, you know, Scott, you were saying you're sort of in the minority. You're actually, I'm on Fantasy Pros where they collect all of our rankings. You're pretty much right in the smack middle.
Okay.
And I am by far the lowest in the industry. Cespedes.
I guess I'd seen him on a couple other busts lists. So
yeah. So I think I'm the one actually probably going more out on a limb here, but I just think that you know, kind of looks almost like a house of cards where he doesn't get on base. The power looked iffy last year. What if he doesn't perform well enough that he does get dropped in the order? It just, you know, it's just not the skill set I like to see from a guy I'm going to invest that high of a draft pick in.
Some outfield questions for you. More likely to be good this year, Desmond Jennings or Dominic Brown?
I'll go Jennings just because Brown has been so awful. Jennings has just been meh for a while.
Yeah.
Brown was awful.
That's why I'm going to go Brown, is because I feel like Jennings is basically limited to being meh. And Brown, you know, I don't know what happened to him last year, but 2 years ago, he was clearly good.
More likely to be great this year, Melky Cabrera or Alex Gordon?
I'll go Melky. You know, Gordon isn't meh in the same way Jennings is meh, but among his tier of outfielders, he's always kind of meh.
He has a menace to him.
Yeah.
How about you? Menace to society? Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So Melky or Gordon?
Yeah. More likely to be great.
No, I think it's Melky.
Melky, do you guys consider him a points league specialist? Not a huge homer or steals guy. Melky Cabrera.
Where did he finish in Roto? Just, and I know he missed some time at the end, I guess.
Let's see. He finished. Oops.
How much time did he miss? Like a couple weeks or more like a month?
25th.
I remember it as being just a couple weeks, but.
Yeah, it's like 3 weeks maybe.
Still finished 25th in Roto.
19th in points.
Yeah, he's
pretty close.
I mean, I think he's kind of a sneaky Hunter Pence type in that, he, you know, we look for the players with the big power. But Melky gives you just enough of everything that I know it doesn't sound like greatness. But then again, Alex Gordon is kind of the same thing, but I feel like at a lower level.
Yeah, I think a lot of people overlook the impact of batting average in the Roto rankings, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, Melky, assuming he's right, is a 300 hitter.
Yep, three of the last four seasons. All right, more likely to bounce back, part one. I think the answer is easy here. Jay Bruce or Shin-Soo Choo?
Easy, huh?
Jay Bruce, right?
Oh, okay. I actually thought you might say Choo.
No.
So, no, I do think it's easy, and I think it's Bruce.
And Scott agrees.
Yep, yep.
Okay, more likely to bounce back, part two. A little deeper here. Alejandro Deaza, who actually had a really good 2013, or Austin Jackson?
The sequel is better.
Yeah?
Yeah.
This question's better, you mean?
Actually, they're about the same.
Okay. What's the answer? Alejandro Deaza or Austin Jackson?
I think Austin Jackson. I really don't know what happened last year with Austin Jackson, but he's just so hard to predict anyway because There's years where he seemingly does nothing but strike out, and years where he teases us with a little bit of power, and years where he steals 20 bases, and there's no clear pattern to it. So I don't see any particular reason at this stage in Jackson's career why he can't give us one of those better years after a very disappointing 2014.
I think it's encouraging that in Seattle, too, he's with Lloyd McClendon, who was his hitting coach when he first came up, and he was a guy who was basically as good as he could be from the very beginning. So I'm not really excited about Jackson. I've always thought he was kind of overrated, so coming off a down year, not really going to make a play for him. But compared to Deaza, who I'm not confident he's going to be a starter, at least not for long.
I think he's a guy that, because he was always sort of on the fringe of being a starter, in fact, he wasn't really supposed to be last year for the White Sox and then kind of backed into the role. And then he was very good down the stretch with the Orioles. And we've seen that. I mean, heck, there was a stretch way back when with the Marlins when Deaza looked really good. And so I don't put the possibility of a bounce back beyond Deaza, but I just think we've seen more of it from Jackson.
For what it's worth, Jackson was awful with Seattle in 54 games last year, 229, homerless, with 11 steals in 54 games. But it's a new season, new leaf. Let's go through this Roto draft and look at round 8 and on, and you guys tell me what you like and you don't like at outfield. Yoenis Cespedes, Melky Cabrera, Jay Bruce, and Alex Gordon are the four outfielders taken in round 8. Yoenis Cespedes, Melky Cabrera, Jay Bruce, and Alex Gordon. Anything you want to touch on with those guys that we haven't already? Or we can move on?
I think we can move on.
Let me say this about Gordon, though. He's always been better in points. He's always been a doubles guy. What about the it's a wrist injury that he's coming off of? He's got a wrist injury right now. Is that a concern?
I think when you're talking about this point in the draft, not really. If you know, there were years not too long ago when Gordon was like a fifth rounder, and that'd be a little scary, but he's fine here.
Round 9, now Danny Santana went, but he's shortstop eligible. Rusney Castillo and Mookie Betts, and that's it. Rusney Castillo and Mookie Betts. So who do you guys like better right now, if you had a draft today?
Oh, well, definitely Castillo. I liked him a little better before the Victorino announcement from John Farrell. And so now, to me, clearly there's some separation there.
I did take Castillo with Betts still on the board last night. But there was a little regret because I needed steals more. And Castillo should be a base stealer himself, but I think Betts will be like, you know, among the top three or four in the league if he's playing every day.
As I mentioned on a previous podcast, Castillo, he was just great in 10 games in September, 333, two home runs, three steals. He homered off Steven Gelts and Sean Kelly. I was trying to make a point about players facing bad competition in September, but, you know, those guys, Sean Kelly, for example, I mean, he pitched all year. Not like he couldn't have faced them earlier in the season.
But he's, you know, if there's a pitcher that a sort of moderate power guy could homer off of, Kelly would probably.
Sean Kelly.
He's pretty homer prone.
Okay, and you know, we're getting to the part of the draft that Scott talked about yesterday, guys that have great potential: Castillo, Mookie Betts, Jorge Soler, Gregory Polanco. So we'll keep going here. Cole Calhoun in round 10, Jorge Soler, and Marcell Ozuna. All right, I like this round. Interesting. Cole Calhoun, Jorge Soler, and Marcell Ozuna. What do you think of that trio? Who's your favorite of the three?
For me, it's Soler, actually, and I don't really have a big issue with the order because I think this is about where those three should go.
Mm-hmm.
I think Ozuna is probably the clear third option out of the three, but Soler, just Calhoun, I think, Scott, you made the comment that we've sort of seen who Calhoun is.
Did
Soler,
you make that comment on the air?
I don't think so.
Okay,
I don't think so.
Have now.
Well, I just... You know, I've been looking at how other sites value certain players, and Calhoun seems to be really high, and I just don't entirely understand it because, he scores a lot of runs, that's for sure, batting leadoff for the Angels, some good hitters in that lineup. But and he'll hit some home runs. He could approach 20 over a full season. And that's fine. I just feel like that's it, though. I mean, he's not a great source of batting average. He doesn't steal bases. If he's batting leadoff, he's not really going to have RBI. And maybe round 10 where he went, that's appropriate. But if you draft with other people based on some of the information that's out there, you may see him go a lot earlier than that.
And, the case for Calhoun, yeah. I'm sorry, the case for Calhoun, 90 runs in 127 games. So in theory, he could lead the majors in runs scored. And the case against him, I think, big one, is he was awful against lefties. 252, 322, 288 with two home runs and 103 at-bats. So I don't know that he's going to play against lefties.
Yeah, there's that.
All right, what were you going to say?
No, I mean, just, you know, so Scott's kind of laid out the, you know, the view on Calhoun that he's probably sort of, he's okay, but he's sort of limited. You look at what Soler did last season, not a lot of playing time at any level, but you combine AA, AAA, and his 24 games in the major leagues together, and you know, there's a bigger sample size there. He walked, he didn't strike out at an obscene rate, and the power at every level, including the major league level, was phenomenal.
Yeah, his numbers have been spectacular.
I don't see Cole Calhoun having that sort of upside.
Well, what about Ozuna? You know, is he not the guy that's sort of taking that step?
I'm definitely a low guy on Ozuna. I feel like he's overrated too. And maybe I'm underestimating the power potential a bit. He did hit 23 home runs as a 23-year-old. But, man, the plate discipline is so bad. 164 strikeouts to 41 walks last year. I'm not sure we can really trust him to hit 269 again, and if he does, I really don't think it goes any higher than that. So it would require him to take a step forward. It would be mostly home runs, and he plays in maybe the toughest park for home runs these days. So
he was great at home last year. He's actually a lot better at home. He hit 12 home runs at home. He slugged 511, 288, 336, 511.
Yeah,
that to me says there's no question he's got the power. Like He-Man.
It's just still, I don't know. Just because he conquered it one year, I still think it might be tough for him year after year.
Okay.
I think Ozuna's in a pretty good run-driving position as well. I mean, I guess it depends where exactly in the order, but if he's, you know, right behind Stanton and Morse, I like that. And I think he can do better with the plate discipline. It's never been great. But it was particularly abysmal last year. And because he's a young guy, again, you know, sort of like we've talked about with some other players, it's projection. But I think there's reason for hope. So that's why I don't even put him on the level of Calhoun, because we have seen what Calhoun can do. But the promise here for Ozuna is pretty enticing. And I think he's worth a flyer with both Calhoun and Soler off the board.
You may have heard me say ow under my breath. I just wanted to throw that out there. For when Al started talking, I went ow.
Did you?
Yeah.
What happened?
I didn't want people to think they were hearing things.
The old tape measure again?
No, there's no tape measure in here. I just scratched my nose. It was a moment where I lost awareness of my surroundings, and oh yeah, people can hear everything I'm saying.
God, so, I hate it when that happens.
Yeah. That explains the ow for all the listeners at home.
Let's move on. And not get injured as we go to round 11. Gregory Polanco is the first pick of round 11. Refresh my memory on Chris Carter's eligibility.
DH
only
for
now. Where's he going to play?
I mean, first base it looks like, but the Astros have so many options that you can't complete. I mean, I think it's pretty safe to assume at some point Carter's going to get five starts at first base, but we don't really know.
Fine, I'm going to throw him in here. Since outfielders are often utility players anyway on your team. Polanco, Chris Carter, Yasmani Tomas, Trumbo, he's got the first base eligibility, and Jason Wirth. Polanco, Chris Carter, Yasmani Tomas, a Cuban rookie outfielder for the Diamondbacks, Mark Trumbo, an American non-rookie first baseman outfielder for the Diamondbacks, and Jason Wirth.
My favorite of those picks is Polanco, by far. During the time he was starting, which was all but the last 6 weeks when the Pirates kind of transitioned to Travis Snyder, for that period he was starting, Polanco was a 15 homer, 30 steal pace guy. And that was with a relatively low batting average. He has a lot more potential for batting average than he showed last year. So, you know, even in a worst-case scenario, he hits 240 again. 15 homers, 30 steals, I'll take it at this point.
I like Worth a little bit better. And I feel about Polanco kind of, Scott, the way you feel about Francisco Lindor, that I don't completely understand what the hype is about. I mean, I, at some point, you got to trust the scouting reports that are just, you know, uniformly glowing over Polanco. But the minor league stats are good, but not great. He's been a good, but not a eye-popping stolen base source. The power's been, for an outfielder, not that great. And yeah, he's a guy who makes contact. But, yeah, until I see something better at the major league level, I'd rather have Worth, and I think there may have been one or two other names that you rattled off.
Yes, Yasmani Tomas.
Trumbo, I think I would go for before Polanco. Tomas.
Yeah, what do we expect from Tomas this year, guys?
Trumbo light.
Okay, so low batting average, high power?
Yeah, and most likely third base eligibility. So if there's anything that would elevate him to or above Trumbo's value, that would be it.
Now, what about Chris Carter? I think undrafted in Roto Leagues last year, maybe late-round flyer, but was one of the best hitters in baseball.
Yeah,
after July 4th.
He and Trumbo are comparable. Trumbo has eligibility. Probably will hit for a higher average than Carter, but not a good average. But then Carter gets on base more in general because he walks so much. So they're guys who you want to... You're going to have to compensate for their batting average if you draft them, but they will make up ground for you in home runs in a big way.
And maybe we see a drop off in tier here after Jason Worth and Trumbo and Tomas and Carter, etc., because we don't have any outfielders going in round 12. Round 13, we have a pick we don't like, Avisail Garcia.
Another pick we don't like, Leonis Martin.
And then Shin-Soo Choo.
Who's fine there.
Getting a little risky, I guess.
So, yeah.
Round 14, Denard Span, Brandon Moss, who might not be ready for opening day, Michael Kadire, and Steve Pierce, who's also first base eligible. We have, Denard Span, Brandon Moss, Michael Kadire, and Steve Pierce here in round 14.
Adam, Moss is, to me, the one that's maybe a little questionable here, just because of the health issues. I think Span's a solid pick, and it's not a reach, but it's I wouldn't want to go too much earlier for Span. He's motivated to steal bases, but that was kind of a first-time thing for him to steal bases on that level, so I'm a little bit skeptical about him having greater value than, say, round 14. And I like Kadire and Pierce here. There's risk with both, probably more with Kadire just because he has a lot of trouble staying healthy. But when healthy, particularly the last couple of years, he's been...
In Colorado?
But it's not all... I mean, you're going to expect some kind of regression from him. But his value now is much more in the batting average than the power. And it's not that the power, even away from Coors, is going to be terrible. But I think the 330... You know, batting average with the NL batting title a couple years ago, I'm convinced that was no fluke.
Okay.
So I like Kadire there. And then Pierce, the risk, of course, is just that he kind of goes back to oblivion. I don't really think that's going to happen.
Would you rather have Steve Pierce or Michael Kadire?
I'd rather have Pierce. I don't really trust Kadire away from Coors, and I don't trust him to stay on the field.
Well, you know, Pierce was banged up a lot last year, too. I really do see risk with both of them. I think give a slight edge to Kadire here.
Would you rather have Steve Pierce or Chris Carter?
Really?
Yeah. I'll check the rankings, but the gut is telling me Pierce.
The gut is telling me Carter, but, I mean, that's not a knock on Pierce. He's on my sleepers list this year.
Would you rather have Gregory Polanco or... Mookie Betts.
Betts. But since you brought up Polanco again, I got to say, I don't really understand. I mean, he's been a 320 hitting 900 OPS guy two of the last 3 years in the minors, and has had a couple 40 steal seasons in the minors. So, I mean, the track record to me looks really impressive.
And
good plate discipline every year.
They got the plate discipline. I cannot dispute. And I actually think it's pretty impressive that upon getting called up last year, the one thing that he did really well, not really well, but well for a rookie, was making contact. But you know, we didn't see a whole lot of power there. And 40
homer
steal,
pace when he was starting. I mean, he had 7 home runs and 277 must at bats. Not have that's been, a 15 homer pace, right?
That is a 15 homer pace, and then that means it's less than a or about a 20 doubles pace. That's horrible.
Yeah, he didn't hit many doubles.
Yeah.
But whatever. I mean, the guy had a 900 OPS in the minors two of the last 3 years.
I think I can get inflated because I've really learned not to trust very high batting averages in the minors that are highly BABIP driven, and I want to kind of soft pedal that with Polanco because he does make contact at a really high rate, but still very, very high BABIPs that it seems like far more often than not don't translate from the minors to the majors. And sometimes that's also the case with stolen base totals that are in the, you know, 30 to 40 range.
Well, just to put it in perspective, Andrew McCutchen never had a 900 OPS in the minors, and he spent 5 seasons there.
Oh, no, that doesn't say anything to me. It doesn't. So he didn't, and that doesn't mean that Polanco did, that he's going to, you know, that these numbers are going to translate for him when, you know.
Well, I don't know that they have to translate exactly for him to be a stud outfielder. I mean, even if he's just this 15th homer, 30 steal guy he showed to be last year. You know, the contact skills come through and he provides average. I mean, that's like a rich man Starling Marte.
Right. Well, you know, and it's taken Marte a while to be Marte. And I don't, you know, unless Marte continues to do what he did late last season, I wouldn't say Marte is a stud. He hadn't been a stud up until then.
Well, this would be an interesting case study. Let's go to round 15. This is Jock Peterson.
Now I know what that is.
Jock Peterson and Will Myers and AJ Pollock. How would you rank those three guys? Peterson, Myers, Pollock.
I'll go Pollock, Peterson, Myers.
Me too.
Pollock, Peterson, Myers. Mm-hmm. Do you like Will Myers in round 15, toward the end of round 15?
I don't love him. I can't really say it's a bad pick, but I mean, just seeing those two players next to him, it's like Myers is just a complete wild card for me going into this season because it's too early to give up on him, obviously. He's still very young. The Padres obviously believe in him.
I'm kind of surprised you're taking AJ Pollock over Jock Peterson because compare Peterson as a prospect to George Springer.
I think it's similar. I think Springer is a little more highly regarded, but the numbers are similar, and Peterson has the potential to be a 2020 guy as soon as this year too, I think.
So you get what I'm saying. For him to go in the 15th round, and we just haven't really put a lot of buzz on him on this particular podcast, it's kind of surprising to me.
And I think it's a case of, for me, wanting to see something from Peterson in the major leagues. Now, if he goes and does even what Springer did last year, which had definitely its highs and lows, then I'm probably going with Peterson. But I do feel like I can rely on Pollock to do something, not quite what he did last year, but pretty close. And that's a skill set that I want to have. Peterson, I have some doubt that it's going to be a smooth rookie transition.
All right, round 16, we've got, best pick of the draft, Brett Gardner to me. And we've got, that's it, I think.
That was definitely the best outfield pick
best
that round.
Best outfielder of that round. Just to continue what we said about Gardner last year, do you have a problem, last podcast on Tuesday, not last year, do you have a problem with him in round 16?
I mean, I've got him on my bust list, but that's not, you know, that doesn't seem like he's being drafted based on last year's production. So, no problem.
Well, very good. Round 17, we have Ben Revere. We have Steven Souza, Tampa Bay outfielder, and Michael Morse now with the Marlins. Oh, we also have Alex Rios. Alex Rios, Ben Revere, Steven Sousa, and Michael Morris.
I think Sousa and Morris both could go a little earlier than that, and it would be just fine.
Yeah, I like Sousa as a sleeper this year. I think relative to where Peterson went, that's probably appropriate because they're both power and speed potentially, but Peterson with the better pedigree, I have a little more confidence in him being an impact player in the majors.
All right, I got to say this because I mentioned to you, Scott, you know, one of our dogs is, you know, dealing with a common illness right now.
Yeah.
And so he normally gets dry food. Uh-huh. But to kind of encourage him to eat more, we're mixing in the pedigree, the wet food. And I was like tempted to like take a picture of it and like, you know, put it on Twitter and say, you know, thinking of you know, Scott Whitewell prepared, because I know that's
the word I use.
That's a word you use.
Pedigree.
So
yeah. Tell me about Sousa's upside. Because he came over in a trade he was from Washington. What was the trade?
Yeah, well, it was the Will Myers trade, and that was the biggest player the Rays got back for Will Myers, who, you know, obviously tons of pedigree himself.
That's sure. Wet dog food.
he's an interesting case because he's 25 now, I think. And just reading up on him, I think Baseball America pointed it out in last year's handbook that he had some maturity issues that kept him from fulfilling his potential right away, which says to me he was this guy who, you know, coming into professional baseball, they had high hopes for him, and he just, for whatever reason, wasn't able to deliver on them until late. And you look at his minor league production over the last few years, it is insane. Like, he hit .355, I think, at AAA last year with good power and speed, like, for projecting it over a full season of bats, like 30-30, and with a good on-base percentage. So it's just the fact that he's 25, and, you know, he didn't really do anything in the tiny bit we saw.
Oh, man, I thought I could hold that sneeze in. I'm sorry.
Bless you, Adam.
By the way, Sousa's going to be 26 in April.
You know who else has maturity issues?
Me?
No, I think I do, given that I felt the need to tell that pedigree story.
No, it was good. I like that, Al. what other avenue do you have to tell that story? You can't do it in your columns. You can't do it on the videos. If you do it on the videos, they'll be too long, because the videos are super short now. Yeah. This is what the podcast is for. Dog food.
Would your wife find it amusing if you told her?
Well, she would. And,
okay,
and,
that's good.
And she did.
Ah, oh, great.
Sousa or Morse?
Sousa. Yeah. I didn't mean to hesitate there, because for me, it's clearly Sousa.
Less clear for me, but yeah, still Sousa.
Let's go to round 18. We've got Marlon Byrd and Chris Davis back-to-back. Chris Davis with a K. Marlon Byrd to Scott White and Chris Davis right after Marlon Byrd to Jamie Eisenberg. Let me tell you a little something about Chris Davis with a K.
Do it.
As I pause to find him in my notes, there he is. So he was awful at the start of the season. He batted .227 in the first 45 games with 5 walks to 49 strikeouts. So pretty horrible. Next 83 games, half a season, batted .270 with a .338 batting average. Or with a .338 on base percentage, excuse me, and a .523 slugging percentage with 16 home runs, half a season, 25 walks, and 63 strikeouts. Then he slumped horribly in his last 16 games, and he was dealing with a forearm injury late in the season that kind of coincided with that. So Chris Davis and Marlon Byrd go back to back. Your thoughts, guys?
I think they have very similar skill sets, actually. Over a full season, I would expect them to hit about .250 with 25 home runs and low on base percentage. The reason I took Byrd instead is because while Davis was slumping at the end of the year, the Brewers acquired Gerardo Parra from the Diamondbacks and played him over Davis half the time. So I think that should be more of a concern than some people are giving it going into this season. That I don't think it would be a strict platoon, Parra playing against all righties and Davis playing against all lefties, but Parra's going to steal some at-bats.
And when Scott says some people, he might mean me.
No, not just you.
Me and other people. Because I'm looking at what I projected for both of them. I've got Davis a bit ahead of Byrd, even with almost 100 fewer at-bats than Bird, because I do have Davis hitting for per at-bat for quite a bit more power and a little higher batting average.
Let's go to round 19. A lot of outfielders here. Oswaldo Arcia, Desmond Jennings, Austin Jackson, Carlos Beltran, Adam Eaton, and Curtis Granderson. Oswaldo Arcia, Desmond Jennings, Austin Jackson, Carlos Beltran, Adam Eaton, and Curtis Granderson. Who are your two or three favorites from that group?
All right, I know this is a guy Al and I disagree about. Adam Eaton is far and away my favorite here. And Arcia would be number two.
And for me, it's Granderson and Arcia. And I hate the fact that, Scott, that we're on different sides with Adam Eaton, because there was a time in the past when I was all about Adam Eaton.
Yeah, there was a time when the whole industry was about Adam Eaton. But last year happened, and he hit one home run and didn't steal even 20 bases, right?
Yeah, that's, I don't remember, but I think that's correct.
I will use my technology here to look that up.
And that was disappointing in those two categories, for sure. He stole 15 bases. But I'm going to use the stat I used for Adam Eaton, I think, on an earlier podcast. And that's from June 13th on. So 75 games, about half a season. He hit .333 with an .841 OPS. And was on about a 60 extra base hit pace. So no home runs during that stretch, but doubles and triples. So not completely punchless, and obviously plays in a home run park. I don't think he's going to be a single-digit home run guy forever. And as far as the steals go, it's interesting. Just the other day, there's a story about him working with Vince Coleman, obviously one of the best base stealers ever, on being more aggressive on the base paths. He has the speed to do it. He showed it in the minors. So just knowing the contact, the on-base ability, the 300 ability, which he showed last year already, and the fact that there is more extra base power there and potentially home run power than he showed last year, I think he could actually have a breakout season.
And you don't?
No, I think he could. I just don't put the odds on it as high as I would have probably this time last year.
Gotcha.
Hey, do you think the news is intact in one piece?
The news is intact?
Yeah. Because
sure.
I think we should break it.
I forgot to even talk about the news with Michael Saunders.
Well, there's newer news. All right. Well, Michael Saunders, first of all, you know how he...
save the breaking news.
I don't know what injury he has exactly, but I know how he got it.
How?
He tripped over a sprinkler head.
Really?
And doing a drill. Yeah.
So he's out how long?
Don't know yet.
At least he's not... at least he didn't...
Oh, half the season, actually. No, he did not trip on a dog.
Okay, half the season. That's no good.
Yeah, I liked him as a kind of a deeper sleeper, so that is no good.
And we'll talk about that tomorrow on the mailbag show.
And
what's the breaking news?
Crod. K-Rod. I've shortened it further to Crod. 2-year deal with the Brewers.
There you go. Pitcher preview next week, ladies and gentlemen.
That was fun, Jonathan Broxton.
How about that? Okay, so of the other guys, Beltran... Austin Jackson, Desmond Jennings. Of those three, most likely to surprise us, have a good year. Beltran, Desmond Jennings, and Austin Jackson.
Beltran, I'll say. Because his elbow clearly wasn't right last year, and he was getting drafted 10 rounds earlier then.
Right.
And I'll go Jackson here. Like I said before, we've seen better power from him. We've seen better plate discipline. And he's not old like Beltran.
We got one outfielder in the 20th round. It's Torii Hunter. We talked about him. Colby Rasmus, now with Houston in the 21st round, along with Josh Reddick. And that's it. And then we've got Michael Saunders. That's probably a bad pick, I would say.
Saunders?
Well, in the 22nd round.
Yeah.
For guys who could play half a season, it's...
Yeah, probably not. So not a lot of outfielders, a lot of like backup catchers and just lousy players going. Shane Victorino, I took in round 23. How about, that looks a lot better now than it did back then. And that's more or less it. So Colby Rasmus, what are your thoughts on him?
Yuck.
Okay.
I mean, it's a very low round draft pick, but...
Well, who are some guys that you might have taken there that we haven't spoken about?
Travis Snyder.
Oh, yeah, you like him. With
I love
now.
Travis Snyder. Yeah, I like him more than I liked Saunders. So I think he should have got drafted instead of Saunders. There's a reason the Pirates stopped playing Gregory Polanco down the stretch last year, and that's because they couldn't get Snyder out of the lineup. He was hitting so well and actually finished the year with a higher OPS than guys like Christian Yelich, Bryce Harper. Still only 26, so just entering his prime, and he used to be an elite prospect who I think just got rushed to the majors at age 20 and, you know, had to try and make up for lost development. Had to develop on the fly, and that's a tough thing to ask anyone to do.
More names.
All right. Well, Reddick went after him. I've got Reddick well ahead of Rasmus. Also Snyder, Dustin Ackley, in the Roto League, Angel Pagan I like better.
Not necessarily who you like better than Rasmus, but who you'd be targeting right now to finish out your draft strong.
Well, I mean, you know, those guys are all...
Yep. We're 55 minutes in. People might have tuned out. Let's save that for first thing tomorrow on the Mailbag Show.
All right.
Late round outfielders that you guys would like to have on your team as sleepers or whatever to round out your Roto or head-to-head points team.
That works.
Thank you, guys. That's Scott White.
Yes, it is.
And Al Melchior.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm Adam Baser. And we're back tomorrow. Fantasy baseball at CBSI.com. Put baseball podcasts in the subject line.